The most important commandment we have is the mitzvah of bikur cholim, visiting the sick. It's not limited to visiting the sick, but the generic of entertaining guests.
I got a question.
Sure.
Right off the bat.
Perfect.
You say this is one of the most important. How are the commandments graded? Is there some that are more important than others?
Well, it's an excellent question.
I thought so too.
Yeah, I'm talking colloquial.
All right.
Excellent topic for another class. Okay. Is how do we, when you have, for instance, there is a question, how do you, let's say you have a choice to do visit the sick or go to Nichum Avelim, to go do a shiva call, visit the mourner. So there are degradations, so we could discuss that in a future thing. But there are levels. I was just talking more generically that it's a commandment that everyone, there's no one will argue with. There's no argument. Even people might not do it, but not because they don't think it's important. They don't get around to it. It's too busy.
Around to doing what?
Visiting the sick. Whether it means going to a hospital, certainly not today. This coming, you don't have to necessarily be, you know, visiting the sick is a misnomer. It could be, you know, a person who doesn't mean sickness physically. You could be someone who's alone, lonely. You know, it's the whole general rubric. So we don't have to go too far. When Abraham was recovering from a major surgery. What was a major surgery? It was the third day of his circumcision. And science agrees also, but the rabbis tell us that the third day after the circumcision is one of the most painful times, for whatever reason. And God made it very hot outside because he knew Avram couldn't wait to help other people, entertain guests. So he made it very hot, a chamsan, so no one would be outside. So he'd get a chance to rest. In fact, you know, as the old joke goes, what's the difference between major surgery and minor surgery? When it's happening to you, it's minor. When it's happening to me, it's major. That's how the joke, I mean, there is truth to that, but that's how the joke goes. But I hope, every time I learn this portion, I think of what comes to my mind is, I had kidney stones many times, but back in the day when you had to stay over in the hospital, now they could do it, depending what it is, they could do it and send you home. So I was recovering in one of the rooms, and there was a person next to me. I didn't know. An elderly gentleman, at least that was like 30 years, 20 years ago. So to me, he seemed elderly. Maybe he wouldn't seem that old now. But however old he was, I'm guessing it must have been in the, you know, 70s or higher. I don't remember anymore. And I just know he was in a lot of pain and agony. So you know, whatever, a couple of hours in, I was, how you doing? What's wrong? What are you in for? He said, I just got a circumcision. I wasn't sure if it was a medical thing or it sounded like some medical reason, but he was in a, so I thought of the portion of Abraham being in a lot of pain. So what happens? God comes down and visits Abram and says, how you doing, Abe? How's it going? How you feeling? So the question is, obviously God knew exactly how Abraham was doing. Like, what do you mean? So one of the main lessons we learn from the commandment of visiting the sick is, who are you doing it for? Obviously, besides, it's good for you, but anytime you do a good deed, it has an impact on you. But the purpose is that even if a person knows, you know how he's doing, he appreciates a visit. He, she, they appreciate a call. The mere fact that when someone, you don't even have to be sick. In normal times, you appreciate it. But certainly when someone's down, bad news, you know, psychologically, physically, whatever the issue might be. So the issue is that we see that's human nature, that we always want people to come and ask how, the fact that someone shows they care about you, that's a tremendous feeling it gives. Even if you know, they know. How are you doing? They know you just recovered from surgery. They know you just lost your mother. It's not a matter of not knowing. It's a matter of showing interest. And that's what we learn from the ultimate. That's from God teaching that to Avram right away. And in fact, that's why one of the commandments we have is to emulate God. It says we have to be like, we have to be godly. What does that mean? So the Talmud tells us is we have to do acts of imitation. Just like God did the mitzvah of visiting the sick, so too we have to visit the sick. God took care of the burial, so too we take care of burials. God comforts the mourner. So we see throughout the book of Genesis, that's why it's called the book of, they say, spend a day with Abraham, and not just Abraham, and you learn how to become a mensch. You see how you follow the Abraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, you follow Sarah, the woman, the men, and you see how they acted, and we learn how to become mentioned. So therefore, you know, they say, Bikur Cholim is the best medicine. In other words, obviously, if a person's sick, they got to take whatever the doctor prescribes, but that you have to take. But equally important, and even more today, people realize the psychological effect that people visiting, whether it's a phone call, maybe with infectious disease, you know, a phone call, Zoom might be better than actually going in and putting yourself at risk. But it's the point of showing that you care. That's the main. However, every person's different, and how often should you do it? That, as always, you have to use seichel. You have to use common sense. But as Mark Twain likes pointing out, unfortunately, common sense ain't so common. And the problem is, it's hard to teach common sense. Either you have it or you don't. But in other words, obviously, as the Talmud tells us, it gives you, again, it's giving you the principles. You have to know how to apply them. They spoke about, you know, they're different times. You shouldn't just be visiting the person 24/7. The person has to sleep. They got to recover. Maybe they're not in the mood for guests. You know, don't just do it for yourself, but make sure it's a good time that for the person you're visiting. Then back then they spoke about you shouldn't go visiting in the first 3 hours of the day because it says the patient looks better than he really is. He just woke up. He's very good. So you say, oh, the guy says, oh, he's great. I just visited him. Nothing to worry about. I'm not coming back. Like, what's the guy doing? And then you go the last 3 hours. He looks terrible. You know, so the F4, again, it doesn't mean literally the first 3 hours. It means you go at go when the time is right. You know, you, obviously today either you call, you email. But the point being is, and also back then, visiting the sick, this didn't mean, we have it relatively easy. But because what it means back then is, what do you mean visiting the sick? Is doesn't mean visiting, means you took care of, like you, what could I get you? I need your meds. Do I have to, what food should I bring over? Could I cook you some food? Who's cleaning your house? It wasn't just, it was the whole picture of going, taking care of. Today, because, you know, the way society is set up, usually from that sense, it's much easier. You just have to go, we show up and show we care or make a phone call, you know, come by, just to inquire. Again, you have to know, some people like a lot of visitors, some are more private. You, as I said, in all these commandments, it has to be done with wisdom, with seichel. Because if you don't have seichel, it's not going to make a difference. You could ruin it. You could ruin a good thing if you impose on people they don't want. You know, you have to. So that's what we learn now. When God visited Abraham, he knew everything, but he knows human nature is when someone visits you, it makes you feel good. Someone inquires about you.
Well, don't visit me in the morning because I'm terrible.
Exactly. So everyone has to know that. That's why you have to know like who you're visiting. And in fact, that's what we learn out. Imagine. In the middle of God visiting Abraham, what happened? Three people appeared, and Abraham said to God, sorry, I got to go now. I see there's three Arabs in the desert, you know, three strangers. I guess they weren't Arabs at that point because Yishmael, but Bedouin, whatever they were, we just called them Arabs. But it's three people, three strangers who were in the in the desert, wherever, you know, and they clearly needed a place to sleep, eat. So Avram leaves and runs over. So from here we learn out another very important interpersonal principle. It says, I'll say it in Hebrew and then I'll translate. It says, Gedola hachnasos archim mikabolas pnei hashchina. In English, it means greater is the commandment of entertaining guests than speaking to God. And you would think, what chutzpah? Abraham speaking to God and, the three strangers need my help. I'll see you later. Like, if you tried that with the king, he'd cut your head off. So I'm just saying it so we learned it from Abraham. How did Abraham know that? It's not a logical thing. Like, if you're talking to the king, you leave him when you're talking about someone else. So Abraham learned it from God. Because usually when Abraham spoke to God in a prophecy, it wasn't the classical like we're talking now. It was in a different state. The point was, Abraham never saw anything when he was speaking to God. All of a sudden, in the middle of his discussion with God, he sees, why is God showing me this? It must be for a reason. He wants me to take care of them. So God gave him the message. Of course, you need Seichel to figure it out. And we learn out. So therefore, in fact, we have special laws. The Talmud, you know, a lot of things we don't have to worry as much, but they talk about, let's say, in the middle of praying to God whether it's the prime minister, one of the people come by and say hello to you. If you don't say hello back, they're going to, you know, they'll kill you. So obviously you're allowed to answer in the middle of prayer, you know, in terms of when people need something. But we see greater, and again, so what do we see the message of entertaining guests? Because it says that Abraham went ahead, he got him and Sarah, they went into the tent and they prepared the ribs, the steaks, the wings, the potatoes, etc. He had whatever food you like, and he gave them a whole big meal. And yet the Bible, the Torah says, when it came to the water, he was very stingy on the water. It says he only gave them a little bit of water. So the question is, like, why? When it came to all the other foods, Abram was all in. He gave them three steaks, three chickens. Like, all of a sudden, why was he so cheap with the water? So there are probably many more, but I'll share with you two schools of thought. One is from the saintly Chafetz Chaim. He's one of the great rabbis of the last century. So he explains as follows. He says, we have a commandment to entertain guests. Again, as to point out, today it's relative. That didn't mean entertaining guests, meaning it was people who were traveling. You didn't know, like, they had people who didn't have food to eat. Today, when we have someone over, it's not that they don't have food to eat. They'll eat, but they want the company. It's not, you know, we do invitations. But the real, it's like visiting the sick man, taking care of them. But today we just have to visit. So to here, originally it was for people who didn't have food. You give them food, you know, in terms of that. So we have that also with the Jewish social services, etc. So what happened was there were the two commandments. Is the commandment to honor the guests, treat them with dignity and treat them well. And then there's another one, you can't be naive. You can't take a stranger off the street and leave him in your house. When you come back, he'll be there with the U-Haul truck, you know, emptying. So obviously you got to have seichel again. You can't just, however, some people emphasize the suspecting. They say, well, until I get an FBI report or a police profile, I'm not having this. So the Chafetz Chaim said we need both, but the emphasis should be on the honoring your guest. And of course, you can't be naive. You got to make sure things are safe, but you do the minimum amount. So why did they have water then? Back in the day, during the time of Abraham, people, the pagans, they used to worship the dirt on their feet. So Abram said, I don't know if he's an idol worshiper. So just in case, I'll give you a little water. That's not my main concern. But when it comes to the food, honoring, I'm going all out. When it comes to suspecting them, I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. That's how some explain. Others explain as follows, that it's teaching us, everyone becomes a tzaddik, a righteous individual, a pious, when it's at someone else's expense. What do I mean? Let's say when you're telling someone else, like, you know what, I heard this person's flying in at 2 a.m., they really need someone to pick them up. How about you want to go and you tell someone else to volunteer? Why don't you go drive to the airport? Why don't you go to the store, this person, when You know, don't become a tzaddik at someone else's expense. In other words, when does everyone become righteous? When it's not on their, it's not for them. It's just the opposite. When Abraham and Sarah were doing what they were doing, they went all out. All the challah, all the meat, all the potato, everything. But back in the day, they don't have like we have. We take it for granted. We want some water. I go to the sink. I turn on the sink. It's a big deal. You can have as much water as you want. Back in the day, they had wells, and you could have been a mile away from the well. And it's heavy. Someone's got to carry it. So Avram sent one of his servants out to get the water. So if Abraham and Sarah were getting the water themselves, they would have brought back gallons and gallons. But to tell someone else to bring all that stuff, so I'm not going to be a right. When it comes to me doing it, then I'll become righteous. If it's someone else, as Rabbi Shaul Salanter, one of the great rabbis, used to say, what's a righteous person? They care about their own spirituality, but someone else's physical needs, not the reverse. They care about their own physical needs, and they're always, well, you should be doing this better, you should be doing righteous person means you take care. And that's from Abraham we learned that. When Abraham and Sarah did it themselves, in other words, don't become a tzaddik. In fact, that's what we see throughout, because we find that when Abraham came back, he fought the war and won. So when back in the day, even now, if you fight a war and win, everything belongs to you. So the king wanted it, told Avraham, okay, I'll give you all the booty. You know, just don't kill us, leave us alone. So he said, I don't want any of the booty. He said, I don't want you to think, people to think God, that you got me rich, God got me rich. But he said, but I'm not taking any, but all my soldiers who fought, give them what they deserve. In other words, like there's a special act of piety that it's a pasuk in Mishnah. Don't soni matonas yechya. Don't take gifts. You know, it's better to be independent. But that's just an added piety. It's not a rule. You're allowed to take gifts. So Abraham, he was on the level. I don't want to take gifts. But who am I? I'm not going to be a tzaddik and say, all you people fought the door, you can't have them. Of course, you take what you want. I'm going to take. In other words, don't be strict at someone else's expense. If you want to be strict, do it on your own account. Don't do it for someone else. And that's why we know Abraham as well. When he was with Paro, when he was another king, he took all the gifts. The king wanted to give Abraham gifts. Not only did he take them, he wanted them. But now he didn't take them. What's the difference? So the difference is because that Abraham back then, when he started off on his trip, wasn't a wealthy individual. In fact, he couldn't even afford a Motel 6. He had to borrow money, they say. And even when he became wealthy, he could afford to marry it. He still didn't go back. He went back to the same motel. So why? Because he says, Derech Eretz, if this guy helped me out when no one else would take me, then I'm going to show gratitude. I'm going to go. So he came back and he paid he couldn't pay him before. Now that he got his money, so the difference is when Abraham was poor and didn't have money, so if you owe money, you don't have a right to take on these pious. What do you mean I'm not going to take gifts? Like, of course you are. If you owe this person $1,000 and someone's offering you, then of course you take it and you take the money and you pay back your debt. I don't take it. What do you mean don't take gifts? You owe this person money. But if I'm a millionaire or a billionaire, I don't need the money. So, okay, I don't need your money and I don't want it. So, in other words, when it comes to what you need to do, so then you do it, but you have to know how to you need the mishko hachasidus, the balance of piety. You have to know when to take on stringencies and when not to. You have to know the situation, and therefore Abraham and Sarah were very strict on themselves, but not on others. In fact, that's why we see it says we learn out from Abraham. In three ways, in different ways, it says doing acts of loving kindness is greater than this doing charity. In what ways is acts of loving kindness greater than charity? It says charity you just do for the poor. Acts of loving kindness you could do for the wealthy and the poor. It doesn't make a difference. Acts of charity can only be done for the living. Acts of chesed, acts of loving kindness, could be done for the living and the dead. We do burial, we do nichum aveilim, and as well, charity is just given with your money, but acts of loving kindness are not only with your money, but with bodily exertion. So the Talmud says in three ways, doing acts of loving kindness is greater than charity. But the commentators explain it's more than that. It's not just a quantitative difference, but it's a qualitative difference. In other words, when is a person, let's say today it still happens, you're walking down the street and someone, beggar, comes to you and says, could I have money or this and that? So anyway, let's say today it's more of a phone call, an email, we give stuff online, but the point being is, let's say I wasn't necessarily thinking of giving charity. Someone called, you know what? They're collecting for this good cause. Okay, sounds like a good thing, I'll give. But it wasn't like I was thinking of doing it. It was an external factor. Okay, now I'll do it. Act of loving kindness is, it starts off with me. In other words, I have to do a good deed. I have a tremendous desire to do it. The question is who I'm going to do it on. In other words, Abraham, basically, those people were angels that God brought down, so they weren't even eating. So the whole original case was, who did God make up this plan for? It wasn't for the angels. It was all for Abraham's benefit. That equally important is the person growing from the event isn't just the poor person, isn't the one you're giving food to, but it's you. If you become a good person by every act you do. You know, I think it was Anne Frank, of all people, said, you know, like one good deed a day. In other words, a person becomes a better person by doing one thing at a time. And therefore, in addition to obviously the impact on visiting the sick, on entertaining the guests, but the impact is on the people actually, in fact, the Talmud says, the one who gives the charity is gaining more than the one who gets the charity. In other words, the poor person, okay, so you gave him, he can eat today, he can eat this week. But the impact, the good deed on your soul, that's eternal. That's forever. So the person doing the giving is always, is the one who gets more. And that's why, because the ultimate love is giving. The Hebrew word for love is ahava. And the Hebrew word for give is the two middle letters in that word, hav. So people think loving is taking. You know, Judaism says loving is giving. In other words, if you want to develop feelings for someone, why do you think the classical Yiddish mama? Because, the mother does more for the child than anyone else. So you would think that the child should love a parent more than a parent loves. I'm talking, in a normal relationship, they both love each other. But the Talmud tells us that a parent's love for a child is greater than a child's love for a parent. You think it's the opposite. The child gets everything from the parent. You know, give me this, give me that, what's for dinner tonight? So you would think a child would, but no. It's because why? Because by taking, you don't develop love for someone. It's maybe you take them for granted. It's giving that creates. So every day, with the mother, from pregnancy to birth, the whole bringing them up, it's every act of giving that creates. That's why a parent loves a child more than a child loves a, because even though it's counterintuitive, when you think about it, it makes a lot of sense, because it's giving that creates love. And that's why Abraham, and that's why the givers are the happy people in life, the takers are the miserable people, because that's just, because it makes sense, because basically the takers are the narcissists, everything's about them, and the givers are when you can put aside your own personal wants and needs and be able to help someone else. So it's a selfish way of being happy by doing good things for other people. Not only is it good for them, but it's equally important, it's good for you. It turns you into and usually it's not the happy people who are doing the miserable acts. It's the people who are happy are usually doing good things. It's the people upset and bitter and angry about things, those are the ones rioting on the street, burning down stores and all that. I don't usually find happy people there at, you know, when they're rioting or, you know, visiting. They're usually bitter about, it's usually a victimhood or entitlement, you know, whatever, every case is different, but it's the unhappy people.
Like Trump's people.
Yeah, I'm not getting into politics, whose people they are, but I'm saying, obviously a person has the right, and we believe in civil protest and peaceful civil protest, you know, and obviously you feel that, so, but in,
no, but they were protesting.